It is game three, game on. The State of Origin series will go to a decider on July 13 in Brisbane after New South Wales completed a demolition job over Queensland last night, 44 points to 12, game two in Perth. Ryan Phelan, Matt Burke, and also Jamie Rogers in for the regular team this morning. We're talking a lot about State of Origin, so it's an appropriate time to bring in the voice of rugby league as far as the print media is concerned. It's a very good morning to Daily Telegraph Chief Sports Editor Buzz Rothfield, who joins us to talk Origin. Good morning, Buzz. Oh, no, he's not with us just at the moment. We'll get to Buzz in just a moment. But as I mentioned, 44 points to 12, an absolute thrashing. Nathan Cleary was the star. Two tries, 24 points, six tackle busts and 68 run metres.
I'm thinking about, you know, what is this, I suppose, conjecture at the moment about the referees, Ryan, Jamie again. And I was thinking about it before, having played, obviously not played NRL, played rugby union. And you know the referee, and when you're on the wrong side of the referee, you get penalties against you. And that's just a given. We all know that. You know, the referee sort of seems to pick on you. But at the same token, the referees don't have to explain their decisions when they're on the field. They don't have to make you feel good about saying, hey, Ryan, that's been five times now. I'm going to give you a warning before
they don't have to, but they do that.
I understand that. But they don't. The thing about it is they don't have to. They don't have to. They're the ones
they
with
don't
the whistle.
Have to sin bin as well.
But they
particularly
don't
at State of Origin, they don't have to blow the whistle as much as they did. Okay, look at these stats from game one.
What was the penalty
in
count?
In game one, the penalty count was 7. Last night, the penalty count was 13, almost double.
Mm. Okay. In favour of, where are we? What's the breakdown?
Well, in the breakdown, it was, so let me have a look at this. So
is it 12-1, New South Wales?
In game one, penalties, New South Wales 4-3.
Yeah.
In game two, penalties, bear with me here, 8-5 to New South Wales.
8-5.
So that's a lopsided penalty count.
Is that so much of a discrepancy, 8-5?
In the context of the game, absolutely it was, particularly with that sin binning. You know, and it absolutely goes both ways. There was, I think, a few that Queensland, you know, got away with that they shouldn't have. I thought that should have been a penalty for the tackle on Cam Murray earlier in the game, for example, which, you know, didn't happen. He was left stitched and bloodied after a high shot from Taulagi. So, yeah, it absolutely goes both ways. But, and it's been divisive this morning with the sin-binning, people saying he should have been, you know, sin-binned. But I just think State of Origin over the years has proven that they put the whistle away, the game moves a lot faster, and we get a better quality contest. And I think it was just a little bit heavy-handed by Ashley Klein last night.
But the reality is he was doing the wrong thing. He was slowing down the ruck. Yes, it was the 38th minute, and Queensland didn't score another point for the rest of the game after he was sin bin, but he did the wrong thing.
And to the letter of the law, they'll absolutely be able to
Queensland
defend it.
Queensland missed 56 tackles as well. Yeah. So, you know,
who was the better team on the night?
New South Wales.
Right. However, I just question whether it would have been the blowout score if it hadn't have been for that sin binning.
So you're saying that 10 minutes made such a mark on Queensland that they couldn't come back from that.
Well, they didn't score another point
after that,
and they were missing a lot of tackles through fatigue.
Mm. Were they missing a lot of tackles or missing a lot of tackles through fatigue? Because I'm looking at the efforts, some of the ones last night. New South Wales played the better football last night.
I'm not taking a single thing away from New South Wales. They were excellent. They were brilliant right across the park, and the team selection was terrific by Fred Fittler. It absolutely had an impact, I think, on the quality of the contest, I guess is what I and maybe a lot of people are making a point about this morning. Let's join Daily Telegraph Chief Sports Editor Buzz Rothfield is with us this morning. Buzz, obviously Freddie Fittler, Buzz, and those seven changes that he made absolutely worked a treat last night.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Look, I'll start off by saying I 100% agree with you, Ryan, on the refereeing last night. What I'd like the NRL to do with Ashley Klein, I'd like to sit him down in front of a video replay of the Women's State of Origin game on Friday night, where the girls are really well trained and they slow down the ruck and they slow down the play the ball as well. But Belinda Sleeman allowed the game to flow, and there was not one set restart in the game. And as a result, we had the most magnificent exhibition of football. Now, the refereeing last night and the penalties, in particular that period leading up to half-time with the sin binning, you know what? Even a lot of the commentators working for Channel 9 couldn't work out what some of them were for. So you're taking a game to a new audience with 60,000 Western Australians, many of them watching a game of rugby league for the first time. They haven't got a clue what's going on. You know, it's all right to say New South Wales were clearly the better side and it didn't affect the ruck. Of course they were clearly the better side and deserved to win handsomely. But as a result, and Jamie, I heard you mention 56 missed tackles.
Mm.
The reason Queensland missed 56 tackles was all that extra work they had to do in that 12-minute period, in that 10-minute period. New South Wales on the night had 61% of possession. Queensland had 39% and 12 men for 10 minutes. And I was really disappointed in the refereeing. And I'm like you, Ryan. I've been brought up and I've watched Origin since the first game in 1980. And they have always put the whistle away in State of Origin. And I have no doubt whatsoever, good on Freddie Fittler for getting any advantage he can get, that his pre-match publicity and his meetings with the NRL football department played a role last night. And you know what? It did go both sides, because that first try Queensland scored from Felice Kafusi was a blatant forward pass from Callum Ponga. And after a big event like this, we probably shouldn't be just talking referees, because there's a great footy played as well. But I just wanted to say that.
Well, then let's go over to some of the positive performances to come out of last night. Buzz, what did you make of Nathan Cleary? He certainly bounced back after copping plenty of criticism following his Game 1 performance.
Yeah, well, what I wrote this morning, Jamie, you're 100% right, was the seven new faces Freddie and Greg Alexander brought into the side. And look, I've got to put my hand up here, because in this spot last week, I was very critical of them and I accused them of panic and I thought they'd overreacted and I didn't like the fact they hadn't picked Josh Adokar, but they were right. So now and again when you misread something, you've just got to put your hand up and say you got it wrong, and I was wrong. And what these guys did, they brought aggression, they brought energy into the football side. Their intensity was incredible, and what this did, it gave them that momentum. It gave them that field position advantage, and it allowed Nathan Cleary to show what a wonderful rugby league halfback he is. And I wrote this morning, I was there to see Sterling, I was there to see Stephen Mortimer, I was there to see Joey Johns, and that Nathan Cleary performance was right up there with the best I've seen. And he was just magnificent. He really was. His just astute direction, his leadership. That Matt Burton try, he read it so beautifully. It was a bit early in the tackle count. The Queensland outside backs on their right side had moved up really quickly to smother the Blues, but he really quickly made that decision to sort of chip it in behind. His old Penrith mate Burton was there to score. He scored a couple of tries himself. He just, you know, just got through some really tight Queensland defence. I think we can say now he's a champion.
And, yeah, he certainly did well, didn't he, Buzz? Mate, what did you make of, you mentioned that Matt Burton reconnected with his Penrith crew. What did you make of his debut?
Oh, just sensational. One of the great Origin debuts. And it's good and it's bad news for the Canterbury Bulldogs, and I'll tell you why. He's still under contract for next year, but as of November, he is free to talk to rival clubs. And Matt Burton right now is on $550,000 a year. That's $600,000 next year, I'm told. So he is going to attract as much attention come November as Cameron Munster at Melbourne Storm. That's the sort of influence he now has on a rugby league game with that unbelievably brilliant kick he's got on him that Queensland just couldn't handle last night. So it was great for Canterbury, the club, that shows despite their struggles in recent years, and I know they've won their last couple of games, that great players can come through their team, even though it's been a struggle, and put on a show like that on the biggest stage. But they're going to have a really, really tough job to keep him. I'm sure Phil Gould's on top of it and the rest of everyone else, but he was just outstanding last night. That kick is something else. I'm sure all the AFL fans at the ground were sitting there thinking, geez, he'd be a handy player to have it full forward. Or, you know, it's not just the way he kicks, it's just the power, isn't it? It's just unbelievable. I can't recall anyone. And we used to have kicking drills in the old days.
Oh, Greg,
I remember those.
What about Greg Brettnell back in the day?
Yeah, Greg Brettnell. You go back further than that.
Gary Belcher used to do it in Origin quite a bit.
Could you imagine this guy in a kicking drill? It'd be a no contest. No one can kick a football like this fella. And he's obviously put in a lot of work to perfect it. And it's certainly a valuable weapon for New South Wales. I'm sure it'll be a valuable weapon for Australia at the World Cup at the end of the year, because there's no doubt in my mind that he will go on tour and he'll be a key player for the Aussies.
So, Buzz, what does Freddie do now for the decider? Does he tinker with the team that has just won Game 2, but there's players like Jack White and Latrell Mitchell, Tom Trbojevic? Can you see any of them coming into the side? And if they do, who do they replace? Or does he stick loyal with the winning team?
Yeah, the incredible thing is, I think last night showed that New South Wales, even before the decider, is now certainly their premier rugby league state again. You look, we had $4 million worth of talent missing last night. There was no Tom Turbo, Latrell, Jack White and Ryan Pappenhausen, who was leading the Dally M's earlier in the year. So what does Freddie do? Very, very reluctant. You wouldn't change a winning side, particularly a side that was so commanding and just so clearly superior last night. The only change I'd make, I'd bring Jack Whiten back. He missed this game because of COVID. He was our best player in the opening game of the series by a long way. And I'd bring him on to, I'd play him in Stephen Crichton's position as right centre for New South Wales. Look, I'd keep Crichton on the bench. Some of them will have to go there, but I do think that Jack Whiten deserves his spot back because he wasn't dropped on form. He was ill.
What if Latrell Mitchell comes back for Souths and looks every inch the star that we know him to be?
Yeah, look, that's a really, really good question. But Latrell, what will he have had? One game in 12 weeks, something like that. So, look, I wouldn't be bringing Latrell back into that football side because I don't see... I just think Burton was so outstanding and I think Jack White deserves the other centre spot.
And Buzz, just quickly, Cameron Ciraldo has closed the door at the West Tigers. I guess that maybe makes Adam O'Brien at Newcastle a little bit nervous, but what's going to happen there in the Cameron Ciraldo space? We know he's been earmarked as the next big thing as far as the coaching ranks are concerned.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Cameron Ciraldo picked up the telephone on Saturday evening, rang the West Tigers, thanked them for their offer, very courteous about it, very professional, but not back the offer. And it was a big offer. It was 5 years. I think he, as I've said on this show many times before, he's only in his mid-30s. He's got a young family. He wasn't ready for the stress of trying to the job that confronts any coach that goes to the West Tigers. My mail is he'll now stay at the Penrith Panthers. He'll extend for one more year and then wait and see what opportunities. There might be something a bit brighter. There could be Melbourne Storm available, a job like that, with Craig Bellamy likely to have his last year in next season. St George Illawarra could be available. You just don't know. The Newcastle Knights could be available. And these clubs are in a better position than the West Tigers moving forward. So where do the West Tigers go now? There's two names I mentioned in the paper today. One is John Morris, the assistant coach at the Cronulla Sharks. He played 72 games at the West Tigers. He's got their DNA. He's a 300-game player. Made the top eight at Cronulla 2 years in a row. Well, there's Shane Flanagan. And I think at some stage we've got to judge Shane Flanagan on his coaching ability rather than the mistakes he's made, which he's been harshly punished for. And look, I'm sure those two will be among three or four people they do interview for the job. I think there's a little bit of urgency about it because decisions have to be made about the future of Luke Brooks and other players at the West Tigers. They've got to be planning right now for next year and the following year and the year after that. They've got to move quickly on this. But most importantly, they've got to make the right decision.
Yeah, watch this space indeed. All right, Buzz, great to chat. We'll speak to you soon on the Big Sports Breakfast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
Taking your heroes and villains on the open line number this morning, 1353 53, and the SMS 0419 767 272. A lot of happy New South Welshmen out there, naturally. A lot of people unhappy about me even suggesting that the sin binning was controversial. Look, regardless, it's an opinion.
Correct.
And it's a talking point from the game. Absolutely, you can agree with me, but some people are getting very personal here by just having an opinion. At the end of the day, you know, to a lot of these people, I think absolutely New South Wales, with the better team, deserved to win the game. Mm. And we're going to win the game regardless of the sin binning. That's not my point. My point was, in the overarching way that the officiating happens in State of Origin, it's probably a little bit inconsistent with how we often go about it.
So
but look, I'm moving on for it. I think people want me to move on from it.
And Buzz Rothfield agreed with you. So you
and a lot of people on the text line are agreeing as well. But, you know,
what do you do with an international then? So we've just had the rep round, international games being played. If that happened in the New Zealand Tonga game, what do you do? Is that a different set of rules to what Origin's played under? And we've got the World Cup coming up as well.
Well, you also know, Berkey, what's the one thing a lot of people are hating about rugby at the moment?
Too many penalties.
Too many penalties.
Absolutely.
And red cards and the like.
There's about 400 million rules, though. Well, they call them laws. That's the difference. Look, I understand that. I understand you don't want stoppages in gaming and you want flowing. But if people are doing the wrong thing, there has to be repercussions to that. And look, I understand the whole, ref, put your whistle in your pocket type thing. And I did Buzz's comment about Freddie, and I said it earlier. I said, that's the job of a coach, to get in the minds of the people who are officiating, and that's the job to just manipulate the narrative to say, hey, what about game one? Game two needs to be officiated this way. And whether then, the referees, Klein, the referees, was in the front of their mind in that regard. But if it only comes in the front of their mind, if the other team, if the opposition, doesn't matter if it's New South Wales, Queensland, if the opposition teams are giving away that many penalties, infringements, what are you supposed to do? Say, boys, don't do it again. And they keep doing it, and they keep doing it, and they keep doing it. So someone's always going to be unhappy with the way the refereeing's been done. So
it's a good point you make about Freddie Fittler as well. His build-up and approach to this game too. There was critics ahead of game one. He got this absolutely spot on with the way he used the media to talk about the referees, the selections,
and
everything
he
got right.
He does it calmly as well, doesn't he? He's not blowing up at all. He does it calmly in his Freddie way type thing.
And he did say it's his job to pick a team that would win.
That would win.
And that they did.
Absolutely.
Yep, and they've got a very strong team and probably an embarrassment of riches ahead of game three, with a lot of injured players perhaps available for selection, the likes of Latrell Mitchell. And we know that Jack Whiten definitely will be available after he had COVID ahead of this game too. So it's going to be a very strong New South Wales squad that they'll have to pick from. In the next half hour here on the Big Sports Breakfast, we're going to be talking Wimbledon with Roger Rashid. It gets underway tonight. We'll hear about the Aussies and how they will fare. And after 8 o'clock, we'll be talking to Bulldogs legend Peter Mortimer and also talking football with Phil Moss. That and much, much more still to come on the Big Sports Breakfast. And just updating the golf this morning, Australia Minji Lee, she tied for second at the Women's PGA Championship. Inji Chun won there by one shot. Minji Lee 4 under, Chun finishing at 5 under. But that means that Minji Lee goes to the top of the Women's World Golf Rankings, which is terrific for her this morning. Congratulations. Sahith Thigala is leading the Travelers Championship at the moment in Connecticut over Xander Schauffele. So 19 under he is at the moment, and Schauffele is at 18 under. So that's the PJ there at the moment. But looking forward to Wimbledon kicking off tonight. 9 men as far as the Aussies are concerned, and also 6 women. The top Australian is seeded is Alex de Minaur at 19. Looking forward to Wimbledon as we do each and every year, albeit with a bit of a different flavour this year. In fact, they're not playing for rankings points, and but the prize money has increased. To talk about that and many more, it's always wonderful to have on the Big Sports Breakfast, Roger Rashid. Good morning, Roger.
Morning, guys. How are you guys doing after your men stumped Queensland?
Yeah, it was an impressive effort by New South Wales, absolutely, last night. So it sets up for a mouth-watering Game 3. But looking forward to Wimbledon, just as I mentioned, obviously, with the no rankings points, what do you think of the quality of the field, really, Roger? It's not too bad, considering that a lot of players maybe would have been within their rights not to, to take on Wimbledon.
Yeah, look, I think points are no points. When you've got a major, I think of any sporting event around the world in any code, players want to be around it and they want to play it. And there's so the history of the sport is attached to major championships. The biggest moments are attached to major championships. And it was a decision Wimbledon made. So that was their call, and the players, you know, then had a choice to make whether they wanted to play Wimbledon or not, and it looked hands down every player. Regardless, there were a couple of players that decided not to play the event, and they were players that were on the cusp of a ranking. Their ranking was there was a guided area of their ranking where if they played another tournament during this time, a lower ranked tournament, and they got some points, it might help them with their ranking, and so they decided to go those way. But the big name players, they want to be there. They want to be around the vibe of Wimbledon. Nothing will change as far as that. It'll be very authentic. And, really looking forward to what's going to play out in the next 2 weeks.
So there's no asterisks on this one, Roger. If you hold up the winner's trophy, it's not going to be an asterisk on this one at all.
No, people may talk it that way, but I think from a player's perspective, no, it won't. There's Look, Nadal, who was well in his rights, who after Paris of not turning up here and playing, he was a little bit sore. He's got himself right, got back on the grass courts as soon as possible, and he's here. Novak's obviously here. He hasn't lost here, lost to Wimbledon since 2017, six-time champion. So Serena turns up out of nowhere and has put a name in the hat in the ring for another title, seven-time champion there, and looking for her 24th major. I think everyone's really excited, and I think that's the way it should be as well. The only downside is that no points is that Novak will lose his number one ranking after this event, regardless of if he wins or not, because he's defending 2,000 points. And we're on a 12-month cycle in tennis, and so 2,000 points will drop off his ranking, and I think it will sit him around 7th or 8th in the world, which is obviously not his current standing.
Rog, one of the Australian women that have qualified to place in Wimbledon is Zoe Hives, and she has just battled so many health conditions and injuries throughout her career, in particular a blood circulation disorder, and she plays 5th seed Maria Sakkari in the first round, so a tough first opponent. But how do you think she's going to go?
Yeah, look, I don't know a lot about Zoe, to be perfectly honest, but I have read her story, and what a great for her also to actually turn up and go to Roehampton, which is the qualifying courts, and actually get out there and qualify. And she got obviously a little lucky with Priscilla Hahn, who's another Australian. They were meant to go head-to-head in the last round, and Priscilla had food poisoning in the morning, so she pulled out of that, which gave Zoe an entry into Wimbledon. But well-earned, and what a story for her, to obviously go through the cycle of being an athlete overseas as well, trying to make it overseas, away from your home base, and to have, obviously she's got some conditions that are attached to her journey. Incredible. She gets to play one of the favourites from Greece, Sakkari, who's the number 5 seed, really big ball striker. It'll be a tough ask, but what an experience. Mm. So go out there, put a smile on your face, really enjoy every moment of it, because she'll be on a big show court. And it will be, one of her dreams, I think, to step on the courts of Wimbledon.
Staying with the women, Swiatek has been outstanding, 35 on the trot. How does she go on grass?
She goes pretty well. She's got an all court game, and I think when you look at grass, and as we may have done in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s where you could actually serve and volley. You know, you got a lot of reward from a grass court as far as what the bounce might do. It might skid through a bit. These courts now, because the players play off the back of the court, they're a bit thicker in their in the way they're presented at the start, because you've got to nurture them and save them, save the baselines, I guess, throughout the course of the 2 weeks. So you see a lot of baseline rallies. The court surface is quite slow, but it does have the nuances of a grass court where the ball can slide away depending on what type of spin you put on the ball, and you can come to net and get rewarded. And your footing, it takes a bit of time to get used to your footing on the grass court. You need to take those little short adjustment step versus long striding steps that you can on a hard court or on a clay court as well. So Swiatek, when you look at all that, she plays all this type. She's very adaptable. So I think you've got to be favourite. 35 match wins in a row. You know, she's fourth round in 2021, and she, you know, who she lost to, Onzubur, who from Tunisian, who's she's one of the favourites. There's no doubt about that. She's won her grass court title in Berlin 2 weeks ago. So her 2021 result wasn't a bad result for Swiatek, but I think she's definitely the favourite here, and I wouldn't be surprised to see her hold up the trophy.
And we'll get to the men's in just a moment, but obviously Serena Williams, the biggest name in women's tennis. She's taken a lot of time away from the game, but eyeing off that chance to equal Margaret Court's record of 24 Grand Slams, where's her game at? Can we expect to see that famous name up in lights again, or is she, you know, she's probably a light of other days as far as her best form is concerned?
Yeah, probably the latter, because you've got to have, regardless of what sport you play, you need a volume of work, don't you? You need a volume of time on the court. You need to be tucked into these tight matches where you've got to serve them out and come through some break points with big serves or big returns or whatever it is. So to not have put you in that, yourself in that space and just turn up to Wimbledon. Yes, she's got game, which gives her a lot of free points. She's got a serves world class, but do you have the legitimate all-round body conditioning, mentally, physically, match play? Probably not. So, you know, you turn up, you know, it looks like her first round's not a bad first rounder, playing Harmony Tan from France. I think, you know, it's a big chance for Serena to get things off to a flying start. And then you sort of never know. When you're a seven-time champion, you've been there, you've got a lot to draw on. And, you know, it would be great to see her get on a bit of a run. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the quality of the opposition now is so deep, and it's a really tough game to play if you haven't spent time on the court. But really good to see Serena out there. And who knows how many times we'll see her. Will this be her swan song? Is this her saying goodbye? I don't think so. I think we'll see her again. But it may be saying goodbye to Wimbledon.
Rog, what about Nick Kyrgios? He's been playing some pretty good tennis recently, and he said in a Fox Sports article today that he's vowing to continue to make top 10 players look ordinary, and that when he's feeling confident, he's playing well, he can just kind of light up whatever he wants.
Yeah, nice choice of words, ordinary, for a top 10 player.
Yeah, exactly.
But Nick throws it all out there, and look, when he says that, I guess what he means is that, you know, he has beaten all the best players in the world. He had beaten the four big ones, Rafa, Roger, Novak, and Andy Murray. So he's, you know, he can do the damage on these courts. We know he's got all the weapons. His game goes so beautifully onto a grass court, and most courts really, but grass court definitely. He's got so many weapons that he's going to be dangerous. There's no doubt about that. So he gets off to a flyer really against a British qualifier. You know, the crowd will be not on his side, but he'll like the entertainment value of that, I think, as well. And yeah, he will be dangerous. It's always a wait and see, isn't it? Wait and see what happens, and wait and see he falls in his road in the next few rounds as well, and see how he gets through that group. But you know, we've got a lot of Australians out there playing, and they've got, you know, they've got great opportunities, and Duckworth is one of them on the first, on day one. We have four men and four women on day one, but James Duckworth's probably got the pick of the matches. He plays Andy Murray on centre court, the 100th year of centre court at Wimbledon. Novak Djokovic will open the proceedings on day one, which is always a magic moment at the championships, and Swiatek will open it on day two. But James Duckworth gets to go out there against Andy Murray in the last match of the day, which is always a bit of a feature, and he'll get to strut his stuff out there. And he's not without a chance as well. And he's, you know, obviously he's picked up his form, but he's not the Andy Murray of old. So there's an opportunity for Ducks.
Yes, sir, Andy Murray with the titanium hip. There's lots of chat about Novak Djokovic, probably for the different reasons rather than playing tennis. He's going to obviously goes in at number one. What about our old mate Rafa Nadal? Third straight Grand Slam. Where is he placed, and how is his body holding up in the rigors of playing? Because it's so good to see him, you know, back on the court and doing so well.
Well, he'd be good on any front row or second row, wouldn't he?
Leading the charge, absolutely.
I reckon you'd put him on anywhere. But look, he's, one thing with Rafa is that when he turns up, he's only turning up to win the title.
Yep.
He's not turning up to, hopefully I can get through to the second week and put up a good showing. I think when you're the greats of the game and these guys, they turn up to win the event. If his body, he didn't think was right to actually get through the seven matches on grass. He hasn't won here for a while, obviously, but he's, you know, he was quick on the grass course. He does adapt. Everyone talks about, oh, how quickly can he adapt his game? Well, as I said, you can play grass court tennis off the back of the court these days, so it does allow you to play yourself in. Mm. He's actually an outstanding net player. You wouldn't think of that. You would think of Federer, then you might think of Novak behind him, but Rafa's an outstanding tennis player at the front of the court as well at the net. So, look, his first couple of rounds look pretty comfortable for me, and then there potentially is a fourth round against Marin Cilic, who's been at the final of Wimbledon and also been a Grand Slam champion at the US Open. So that may be his first tricky match, but I feel like Rafa will get to the second week, and then from there, who knows? But Novak is definitely a clear favourite on grass without Roger around. Obviously, we're not sure when Roger will make his way back to the courts. Berrettini, who I think's who's probably the third favourite behind Novak and Rafa, and he's had 9 weeks out, but he came out and won Stuttgart and Queens. They're probably my top three for the men's, but Novak's definitely a clear favourite.
Yeah. So, Roger, how does the 2 weeks look for the Aussies? Seedings would suggest that Alex de Minaur is our best hope. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it is, and his first round looks comfortable as well. That which is good. You always want to get off to a player match where you've got a comfortable first round opponent. I don't think he'll get too many problems with his first round opponent. Kokkinakis gets an opportunity to get a, you know, if he gets a win on the board, which I think he will. He plays a Polish player, and he then gets a chance to play Novak. So that'd be a center court one match. John Millman plays a 30th seed from Serbia. So you know that's going to be tough. John's really sort of battling to find some real true consistency in his form of late, and obviously he's been out there for a long time, and I guess the spotlight will be on Nick at the end of the day as well, Alex and Nick, and then when you look on the girls, on the women's side of things, we've got Ala Tomljanović who's up against the 18th seed Teichmann from Swiss, Jill Teichmann from Switzerland. So I think that's going to be it's an opportunity for her because she does drive the ball hard through the court. She's got an opportunity in that match. You wouldn't sell her out in that tennis match. And I'm looking forward to watching Darius Seville play, or Gavrilova, who's now married to Luke Seville. She's put herself back in the top 100, really feisty. She's really a top 40, top 50 player. Looking forward to seeing what she does out there on the courts of Wimbledon.
Looking forward to Wimbledon. It all gets underway tonight. And Roger, looking forward to talking to you over the next couple of weeks.
Thanks, guys. It'll be a fascinating fortnight.
Roger Rashid joining us this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast. Just updating you from the Travelers Championship. What an extraordinary 15 minutes or so it's been since I last updated you with the leaderboard. Sahith Theegala was leading the tournament, and he found the bunker on the final hole. His ball sat right on the lip, and he had two in the bunker, and he's now slipped to second and I guess lost the tournament. Xander Schauffele, the winner at 18 under, extraordinary finish.
He's dropped into the fairway bunker, took two to get out, needed to make the bogey, doubled in the end, and Schauffele's hit it 3 feet on his second. So he will birdie, and he'll take the Travelers Championship. Oh, you talk about you talk about owning your sport and just doing the stock standard. That's pressure off the tee. We saw it a couple of weeks ago when Justin Thomas won in one of the other tournaments where one of the Spanish guys, I can't remember his name, dropped it in the drink on 18. The pressure of winning a PGA Championship after 4 days, 72 holes, and one stroke has just absolutely put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, extraordinary finish, and plenty more still to come on the Big Sports Breakfast this morning after 8 o'clock. Peter Mortimer, Bulldogs legend, will be joining us. Terrific to be talking to him this morning, and Phil Moss will be talking football as well. And we're taking your heroes and villains this morning. Keep them coming in. The open line number 13 53 53.